one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies only got one game under their belt against the Mets. Kind of a weird schedule here this weekend. Phillies start a three-game series against the Mets with a game on Thursday and then have an off day on Friday. I guess this is for the Juneteenth holiday, but there's a lot of other games going on around Major League Baseball here on this holiday, so I don't understand what the schedule makers were doing here, but they will finish off the series on Saturday and Sunday. But we can talk about Friday's game and what went down. We'll talk a little Aaron Nola. We'll talk a little Jose Alvarado. I do want to just have a discussion of, you know, this is a baseball team that's still over 500. It's holding a playoff spot. What do we feel good about? Let's talk about some good things about the Phillies, because I do feel like I tend to just want to focus on some of the stuff that's annoying me because it's the lowest hanging fruit. But I also want to get an expert's opinion on the latest with the collective bargaining agreement. And that, of course, would come from Liz Rocher, my co-host here at the end of the week. Normally you hear Justin's voice. Justin is off today, so it'll be Liz and I here on the end of the week podcast. She, of course, is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. Happy Friday. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Last night's Mets game was stupid. I hated it. But thankfully, we just don't have a game today on a Friday. I don't know what this is. If there's an event happening in Philadelphia of some kind that they needed the stadium. I don't think so. I could be wrong. I'm not there. So it's just stupid. It's a Friday night. No one's going to have anything to do.
I'm Googling right now as we speak. Why is there no Phillies game on June 19th? And the reason is the Phillies are off on June 19th. This is according to the good folk. There is no greater source for this kind of information than Reddit. So this is where this information is coming
Honestly,
from.
Honestly, I would kind of agree with that. Truly.
No, it's actually USA Today. It's because the FIFA World Cup is hosting a match at Lincoln Financial Field across the street from Citizens Bank Park. So that is why there is no Friday game.
And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
let's take it back. I know I've experienced when there was baseball and hockey, and I think basketball at the same time in the same place, and that alone was ridiculous. World Cup, I'm a concerned for the health of everyone if there was a baseball game down there too.
Well, and you know, they've done multiple sports, you know, in the complex at the same time, but I guess this is Brazil versus Haiti.
Oh my God. Oh yeah, if it's Brazil, like they should shut down the entire southern part of the city.
Right, exactly. Like if this was like Cameroon versus Iran, probably not needed. You probably don't need to move the Phillies game to another night, but when Team Brazil is coming to Philadelphia, and I'm not even a World Cup guy, I'm not a soccer guy, I don't care one way or the other about any of this that's happening right now. I have absolutely zero dog in this hunt at all, but I know Brazil, it's going to draw a crowd to Southern Philadelphia.
The largest population of Brazilians outside of Brazil right now is in the Philadelphia area, I'll say.
Is that right? Oh, yes. Yeah, right now there is. Yes. Currently today here
right
on
now,
June 19th.
I believe that many, many Brazilians have poured into the city and are waiting to cheer their team. I'll watch that game. I'm sure that's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good game. And I think Team USA plays, as we're recording, it's 12:20 on Friday afternoon. I think they play at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So I know there's going to be a lot of people who say they're not soccer fans who are going to watch that game this afternoon. So we'll see how Team USA does. But anyway, that's why there's no Phillies game. This is all. I mean, obviously, this is our Phillies universe, and everything revolves around the Phillies at the center of it. And so that's why this is apropos. Why there's no Phillies game at Citizens Bank Park? I think they're going to need all those parking spots, and it's going to be a wild scene in South Philadelphia tonight. But they did get a game in on Thursday, Liz. It was not enjoyable. It was not a fun game to watch. It was close late. It was 3-3 in the seventh, but Jose Alvarado gave it away. Phillies lost 6-4 to the Mets on Thursday night. Trey Turner left that game, Liz, after getting hit by a pitch in the first inning. It's like the second time in four games that he's gotten hit by a pitch and had to leave the game. Last time it was on the wrist. He missed a game and then came back for the series finale against who did we play? The Marlins. And now here in this opener against the Mets, he gets hit by a pitch. We don't know as of right now the severity of the injury, but I got to ask at this point, is it addition by subtraction if Trey Turner is not in the lineup at this point? I mean, it
might be. It's not looking good. Those are not fun numbers to look at.
No, he, I think, has the, I think he's second last in terms of OPS among qualified major league shortstops right now. He's at bottom.
That's,
I think,
very
he's
bad.
The bottom, like among the 10 worst position players in terms of wins above replacement overall among qualified players right now in Major League Baseball. This is the second time in his Phillies tenure he's gotten off to like a 3-month abysmal start. For a $300 million player, great players doesn't happen to them, to great players. And I think that's where I am on Trey Turner right now. No longer a great player, because you've got to be able to avoid these kinds of things. And he, like, for this long, even Alec Bohm's slump didn't go this long, Liz.
Nope. That is 100% entirely true. These types of slumps are hard because they make you question like a player's talent. And if he hadn't been so frequently kind of mediocre / bad during his tenure, because he's had some real low times here, if that hadn't been as common, I don't think there would be as much of a question about it. But I don't think he's like I think you're right. I don't think he's like a star player anymore. I don't think, you know, he's got to earn his way back there. And he had, thus far, he just hasn't. It's been even, I mean, I just looked up his baseball reference page. I had no idea he was hitting .223. He hit .304 last year.
Yeah. The only hitter in Major League.
He's got to get his head on straight. I don't know what's happening.
I saw a really good, and I'm going to, and I totally forget which X profile I saw this on or who did this. So my apologies, but I saw on X, And I retweeted this on my feed, so that's where the credit will be for this.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so they did a side by side of Turner's swing from 2021 when he was with the Dodgers to where it is right now, and like he's getting all twisted up when he does his leg kick before the pitch is coming when he was with the Dodgers. And I saw the same thing with JT Realmuto last year. I wrote a story for The Good Fight about this. These stupid leg kicks that some of these hitters use. I would love to banish it from the sport. Whoever thought that it would be a good idea to teach these guys to use a big leg kick to try and time things out, I absolutely hate it. Because when that goes wrong, everything goes wrong. We've seen it with JT Realmuto last year when he got really hot. He stopped drawing his knee in so close to his body on the leg kick. Instead, it was just kind of like a simple lifting straight up and then planting down. And what he was doing and what Trey Turner is doing right now is he's picking up his knee and almost bringing it into his stomach as opposed to just lifting it up off the ground. And what that's doing is he's not able to swing on the right plane. Everything's a ground ball. He's not generating any power because he's basically swinging off of like his weight moving backwards. It's just, it's all kinds of messed up. And I'm just wondering to myself, like, what, unless that was wrong, unless this person who posted this on X is wrong, I wonder, you know, what Kevin Long is seeing and why they're not able to kind of get him to make this mechanical adjustment that seems like a pretty obvious one.
I mean, it's not just Kevin Long. I mean, he could tell the players what to do and what's going to be best for them, but ultimately they make the final decision.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ease off on blaming Kevin Long fully for this. Also knowing that changing physical aspects of something you do a lot, and players practice their swing a lot, it's really hard.
Yeah.
You know, he might be doing it in practice, but when he gets out there, it might still be happening because it's just force of habit. And we know it can be corrected and changed. And I hope he's trying to change it, because the foot tap helps for timing for some people, and it can help some players sort of get back on track in timing their swings if it gives them sort of like a, you know, it helps them get into rhythm. But it's not helping him. It's obviously not helping him. And who knows if that's the only thing not helping him, but, you know, let's try something else. You know, the All-Star game is still a number of weeks away, and everyone who's looking for a break for everyone to get their heads on straight, it's going to be a little bit. And so it would be better for everyone concerned if you were to fix it now.
Yes. I think Liz is right. I think Trey Turner should fix it now. I don't think he should wait.
And I don't think he's trying to wait. I'm just saying, you know, that's what everyone's expecting. You know, like, right. Oh, let's wait till the All-Star break. You know, it's happened before. Players come back great. Players come back terrible sometimes. But let's hope that there's a flip somewhere with Trey Turner, because we've seen him do it. We know we can do it. This time there will not be a standing ovation, man.
No.
Get yourself together. You're a grown man. You don't need us to stand and clap for you, because you're getting paid so much more money than any of us.
Yeah.
So just do it.
No
ovation. Just do it.
You got one mulligan in 2023because you were new. That's it. You're done. We are a more charitable fan base than we have ever been in the history of Philadelphia sports.
Truth.
Like, across the whole fan base, across all of the sports. But that has its limits, you know? I mean, it can't go on like that. But I mean, I guess the thing is, there's no choice. Like, there's no alternative but to, you know, keep using Trey Turner. But I think maybe getting some time out of the lineup, you know, would be a good thing for him and for everybody. And Edmundo Sosa can play shortstop for a couple of days. Just like keep him out through the weekend. Let him use it as an excuse to reset like they did with Alec Bohm, and then kind of go from there. That's what I would do.
Little hit by pitch, just stay. And I think they've been trying to do that when he's been hit, you know, give him a little bit of time, see if something switches, but it hasn't worked so far. I mean, there are worse ideas, and it's not like they should stop doing it, because at this point, anything could help. As we know, anything could help. But there are no more. Unlike a team, you cannot hire and fire someone specifically to help one person. So,
Now I want everybody to know that Liz and I do recognize that this Phillies team is a winning ball club right now, that they are in a playoff position. So the first part of this podcast is going to be talking about some of the things. The reason why we're focusing on a lot of these things rather than like, hey, Alec Bohm's been hitting really great lately. So has Bryson Stott. We know all those things. We know how good Zach Wheeler's been, and we've talked about it, you know, but right now we're talking about the most immediate stuff. And so we're also talking about these things because we're looking at a team that it's World Series or nothing else in terms of what a successful season is for most of the fan base. And so these are the things we're identifying as like that need to be fixed or that you want to see improvement on to give you a better feeling about this team to compete for a World Series, to match up with the Braves or the Brewers and the Dodgers right now. And so these are the things that are creating the gap between the Phillies and those other three teams, which are clearly head and shoulders above them. So as I was putting this show sheet together, Liz, I was like, man, I'm just negative, 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 negative. But there's the reason that is that way, and the reason why my Twitter feed is a disgruntled old man yelling at clouds right now is because there is this desire for the team to kind of shore up the weaknesses that are there right now. So
absolutely, we are a podcast that used to get the accusations of being overly negative, and we had honestly tried to make things better, and so we're very sensitive to being negative on the podcast, but these are legitimate problems that they need to fix. Like, we'll talk about some good stuff. Let's talk, like, this is all valid, John.
I want to, I mentioned this on the last podcast, but I wanted to pass along a review that we got on Apple Podcasts, a 5-star rating and a review.
Oh, really? I was worried it was going to be one of those, get rid of the girl, she's terrible.
No. And all those people need to shut up because they don't know what they're talking about. So that's right. I'm talking to you, listener. All right. Tom Rend, and I don't know who that is, but Tom Rend posted, John, Liz, and Justin are quintessential Phillies fans, forever hopeful, but easily discouraged. I love riding the Phil's roller coaster with them. And I think that's just, if I could put that on a t-shirt, I think I would. But
that's
then
so
I would
nice.
Probably get
thank
sued
you,
by somebody. So yeah, but thank you for that, Tom. Forever
I don't
hopeful.
Think you'd get sued. You'd get sued by Tom, maybe. And I don't.
That's right.
He
That's
did
right.
write this into a form on a publicly available forum. I don't think he'd be upset if you put
no,
it
probably
on
not.
T-shirts
probably not.
That like maybe me, you, and Justin wore.
That's right. Forever hopeful, but easily discouraged. I think that that
that's the Phillies fan base in a nutshell. Honestly,
that is.
I don't think I've ever heard it described as succinctly as that.
Yeah, that was a good one. So yeah, if you would like to also add your two cents, leave a 5-star rating and a review at Apple Podcasts. We'd love that. All right. I want to talk a little bit about Aaron Nola. Not for long, because we've had all the Nola discussions, but I'm taking advantage of Justin not being here to talk about Aaron Nola, because this makes...
He almost can't when he's around anymore.
Makes Justin dry heave a little bit whenever Aaron Nola's name comes up in the podcast. It was a very Nola-like performance on Thursday night. It felt a lot worse than the numbers actually probably than the numbers ended up looking like. He gave up 2 home runs to Juan Soto in the first 3 innings. The second one looked like a flyout to center field. I don't know if you saw Soto's reaction to that, Liz, the second home run. He like threw the bat down and was frustrated because he thought he got under it.
Yeah, he was super annoyed about it. I thought that was funny. I think one of the reasons people used to call Citizens Bank Park a bandbox is because the wind can sometime really pick up.
Yeah.
It can really pick up a ball and send it right out there, but it has to be in like the right place. And that ball was in the right place with the right wind. That was annoying. I was also annoyed.
Yeah. I was like, why can't the Phillies get one of those up there like that and just catch a jet stream? Because that ball just kept going and going and going. He gave up the 2 home runs. But when you look back at the end of the game, he went 5 innings, gave up 3 runs. Only the 2 solo home runs to Juan Soto were earned. Now, Nola has a habit of this year giving up a lot of stuff early and then kind of shutting it down. But it kind of sucks to get put into a position where you're catching up right from jump. And so that's why it kind of feels like some of these starts are bad. But I mean, look, struck out 6, walk 1, but he gave up 7 hits and the ERA is still 5.71. Is this kind of an Aaron Nola start? 5 innings, gives up a couple of home runs, 3 runs total. Is this the most we can hope for from an Aaron Nola start moving forward, Liz? And I guess what I'm asking more is, should we be grading his starts on the Nola curve? Like, maybe a D plus or a C minus for most pitchers, but for Aaron Nola, this is probably a B start for Aaron Nola. What do you think about that?
I was going to say, thinking about this, looking at the show sheet, grading on the Nola curve.
Yeah.
It did feel worse than it ended up being, because I was going to say it's a solid C, judging by the Nola curve. It's standard. It's not special. There's nothing overly extraordinary about it. But I think this one could be a B, because it wasn't as bad as it could have been. And that's the Nola curve, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this, for most pitchers, would be like a C-minus performance. It's not a quality start. He only went 5 innings, so he made the bullpen go the other 4. So it's another Aaron Nola start where the bullpen is getting churned through because Nola is not efficient with his pitches anymore. He was a guy who used to go deep into games. That's just not who he is anymore. And so it's probably a C-minus performance from most pitchers. But for Aaron Nola, I do think, because we've seen the alternatives, you bump it up a letter grade. But that's... we should not have the Nola curve for a guy as young as he is. And he's still on the younger side of things, I think 32, 33 right now, and still signed for another 4 years after this season, for big, big money. Shouldn't be on a Nola curve. These are 2 high priced guys, Trey Turner and Aaron Nola, who both are giving you below league average production. And it doesn't look like it's changing anytime soon, especially for Nola. So yeah, I think Nola kept you in the game, but he made you burn through the bullpen. He got you down early, and you never felt good in any of the innings in which he was pitching. That's what we get now.
Yeah, that's about right. And I think that's what we should completely expect. I mean, I was looking at his his ERA per month just to see, and it's all right around the same. mid five. Early 6, that's who he is, and it sucks, but he's shown us that this is who he is over and over and over, and it's time we believe him.
It's time we believe him. That's right. And see, a start like this where you give up 2 earned runs in 5 innings, 3 runs total, brings the ERA down. So I mean, this is a better than average Nola start for him. But if you're walking around with an ERA in the mid to upper 5s, you shouldn't be in a big league rotation for long. I don't, even if you're the number five starter, that's still too high, even for a number five starter. So if it was anybody else and they're paying any, you know, paying money to, you know, any lesser amount of money, if this is a $10 million pitcher, they're looking at kind of moving him to the bullpen or figuring something else out. It's only because he's under this contract and because he's the guy that he is that they're moving forward with him with a 5.71 ERA.
It's because they've put so much time and energy into him as a player. You know, they've nurtured him, and they're going to keep doing it, hoping he can get better, because he's their guy. And they've made it clear from the start that he's their guy, and they're going to ride or die with him from beginning to end.
Yeah.
He's just one of those guys. It's a little Ryan Howard-esque. We signed you to this big contract. We don't think you're going to be able to perform throughout the rest of it, but we're not going to embarrass you. You know, you're part of our family. We're not going to embarrass you, because they never embarrassed Ryan Howard throughout his whole time here. And that's something I think this might be the first time I've really thought about it that way.
Yeah.
But they never made him feel bad, I don't think. They never increased him feeling bad beyond what he was putting on himself.
Yeah.
And so I think they're going to do that with Nola, because he's been a good soldier for the Phillies. He was there early when they sucked.
Yeah.
And he's been with them the whole time. He took the contract that they offered. I don't think there was a lot of back and forth, unless I'm misremembering.
No, not much.
No. So they're gonna stick with him. They are intertwined.
And he's gonna go down as one of the 5 or 10 best starting pitchers in franchise history. He's not gonna be remembered that way, but he is. He's gonna, you know, we the beginning of his career is kind of getting overshadowed now by the end point. As the stakes have risen for this team, his performance has gone downhill. But we did get a couple of years there in 2022 and 2023, where the performance matched the level of play by the rest of the team. And so there's just that hope he's gonna find it again. And it's not there. So
it doesn't seem like it is. Here's the thing. I think he's got enough talent to make his arsenal work, but he has to actually figure out how to make this work. He can't keep pitching like he's got different pitches. And I think that's what he's still doing. He's not pitching to make his arsenal a strength. He's pitching now from behind automatically, because he's throwing pitches that he thinks he has that he doesn't.
Well, he can't throw his fastball over the plate at this point. And the problem. Well, yeah, and it's the same problem that Andrew Painter had. If you can't play off your fastball, your secondary stuff isn't going to get swung at as much.
No.
And so until Greg Maddux was able to get away with what he was able to get away with the kind of stuff, even in his age, in his day, he was throwing softer than most of his contemporaries. He was able to get away with it because of pinpoint command. Now, no one can expect another pitcher to have that kind of pinpoint command. Greg Maddux was a unique individual. But it's got to be better than what Aaron Nola has shown. Like, he just has to be so perfect every outing, and it's impossible to be as perfect as he needs to be, really.
Exactly. Like, pitchers usually don't like pitching, and most of the time don't pitch with no margin for error. That's why the offense is there most of the time.
Yeah.
The offense is there, so you don't have to be perfect. But Aaron, trying to be perfect, and then there's failing so enormously that...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And
maybe you shouldn't try. Maybe we should recalibrate, readjust, take some time and figure out what this is, because he's got to do that this offseason. If the rest of the season keeps going the way it is, he can't come back with the same stuff. He's got to figure some stuff out. Otherwise, it's just going to be another year of like a mid to high five ERA and, you know, like at least 10 games that he pitched that could have been won had there been a pitcher with even slightly better command or a decent fastball.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think another year this is going to fly. But right now the Phillies need him because they have that hole in with Andrew Painter gone. And there's...
Oh, this has all gone so well.
Yeah. It's amazing. It actually is amazing. They're over 500. You know, it really kind of is. You look at the run differential.
Over 500 on the road and at home, just barely at home.
If you believe the run differential, they should be an under 500 club, but that's not where they are. So good for them.
And, you wonder why the Braves have been so good. Their run differential is, they've got plus 100 right now. Like, yeah, they're hitting the cover off the ball and have been all season.
Yeah, playing good deep, playing good. I mean, they've struggled a little bit of late, but yeah, it's there's a reason they built up a 7-game lead in the National League East. Another pitcher who's been with the team for a while who is having a hard time finding his footing is Jose Alvarado. He was the culprit for the loss on Thursday night, gave up 3 runs in the 7th inning, got smacked around doing it. His ERA on the season, 6.58. And if you go back to May 14th, the middle of last month, so about a little over a month, he's given up 11 earned runs in 12 innings. That's an ERA of 8.25 over the last month. He has not gone more than 3 outings in a row without giving up at least 1 run, and he's given up 5 earned runs in his last 2 outings. But I thought it was interesting what he said after the game. He said, "Hitters are feeling confident that they can hit against me. It seems like 100 miles an hour is something that they've seen a lot at this level now. It's not surprising anymore." And he talked about needing to figure out how to mix up his pitches more and throw them in and out of the zone. He said up until this point, he's just been focusing on throwing as hard as he can and throwing strikes, which until the last couple of years has really worked for him. Right?
Yeah.
That's been the key. He seems to be saying, because there are so many more hard throwers right now, my hard stuff isn't as special as it used to be. And so if I'm just living in the strike zone all the time, throwing hard isn't going to generate the swing and the miss, and it's not going to generate the kind of success that I used to have. I kind of buy that, Liz. What do you make of what he's saying there? And now he's on a path to figuring something else out.
I mean, God love him for just sort of saying it out loud. I love it when pitchers, especially pitchers, really talk about what they're doing in, because they control the ball. The hitters are all reacting, but the pitchers are the ones that control. So I love hearing them talk about what they have to do, mixing up their pitches, you know, how they're approaching their own game. And hearing him talk about it like that, he has a handle. It seems like he has a handle on what's going on and why he hasn't been doing well. And, you know, it's a little bit into the season, but considering how long he's survived, not survived, but thrived with doing what he's been doing, throwing hard and throwing strikes, you know, we should all give him some grace for trying to figure out how to be different.
Yeah.
Because just like changing a leg kick, it's hard because pitchers practice their delivery all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that he is able to, now that he's sort of on the path, figure it out. And we need him to do so much better than he's doing.
Yeah.
But there's going to be an adjustment period, and let's hope it's short.
Yeah, with
just because the Phillies don't have a whole lot of options.
Yeah, they don't. With Brad Keller out, right now they are really short on reliable left-handed relievers. They sent Tanner Banks down to the minors because he has not been able to replicate the season that he had a year ago. He's been pretty brutal. Right now, Tim Mayza is their only reliable left-handed reliever in the majors. He is likely to get more of the high-leverage innings, I think, while Alvarado works some things out. And they do expect Kyle Backus to return from injury soon. He was not very good. I had a great spring. Remember, he was the guy in the spring who everybody loved, and then he came up and started the regular season and sucked and got blitzed by opponents. But he's likely to come back here at some point. But they really do need Alvarado.
That's just a guy.
Yeah.
At least there'll be more people. Because I was just thinking about that. Like, it's another thing. Like, they've got innings that are there for pitchers to pitch in and win, and they just don't have any guys who are up to it.
Well, when they came into the season, left-handed relief was a perceived strength. They had all the guys I just mentioned. You know, you have Alvarado, you have Tanner Banks, you have Tim Mayza, and Kyle Backus looked really good. Those 4 guys made the bullpen out of spring training, and you felt pretty good about all of them. And right now, you're kind of iffy on 2 of them. One of them's in the minors. One of them's rehabbing. One of them is struggling in the majors. And then one of them is pitching pretty well. I will say this about Alvarado. His stuff is exactly the same as it's been. I was looking on his Baseball Savant page. It's all still real good. He's still 95th percentile in average fastball velocity. He still averages 98 miles an hour on his fastball. So 95th percentile. You'll take that. His chase rate and his whiff rate are both 84th percentile. Still in the red, still doing very good there. His strikeout rate is 81st percentile. That's come down a little bit in recent seasons, but still pretty good, right? The barrel rate, his hard hit rate against, 90th percentile. So the peripherals for Jose Alvarado are still good. You have an ERA of, 6.58 and an ERA over the last month of 8.25. It feels like there's something fixable there. It's not a stuff thing.
Exactly. I think it's just location and mixing pitches. I think it's just something that, if his stuff is the same, then it's other things that he's doing, how things are being set up. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think you're right. Seeing that it's such a big jump, it's got to be something fixable. And the Phillies managed to fix it once when he came over from the Rays.
Yeah.
He was a flamethrower who had no idea where the ball was going. And now he at least has an idea of where the ball is going. But now instead of being a thrower, which is fine when you've got stuff like he is, I think being just a thrower is completely acceptable. But now he's got to be a pitcher. He has to learn, not that he doesn't know, but he has to figure out what's the best way to mix up my pitches. When should I go outside the zone? When should I go below the zone? When is the best time to do this? And when's the best time to blow him down with my good stuff?
And can he command the baseball well enough to do those different things? It seems like
exactly.
And I think that's going to be the big key for him. Can he command the baseball well enough to be that specific about where he wants to move the ball in, out, up, down, off the plate, over the plate, all that kind of stuff.
So I have faith.
I feel decent about his ability to recover. I'm never going to feel secure with Jose Alvarado out there.
Oh, no.
I don't know that I've ever felt secure with Alvarado out there. And you really just need him to get hot for the playoffs. You get a hot Alvarado in the playoffs,
He's unstoppable. Except for that one unfortunate home run he'll allow.
Yeah.
He's unstoppable.
So we've talked about the back of the Phillies rotation, obviously with Andrew Painter being sent down and Aaron Nola what he is. We've talked about over and over again the Phillies need to get another, at least one right-handed bat, preferably an outfielder. We know the Phillies are going to be looking for that at the trade deadline, and I think the Phillies need to find another left-handed reliever. Liz, rank the Phillies' trade deadline needs. Those three things. A right-handed outfield bat, not in terms of what might be available or anything. Let's work under the assumption that there is a reasonable acquisition for all of these different things. Okay. Right-handed outfield bat, a fourth, fifth starter, or a left-handed reliever. How would you order those?
I'd say the pitching is definitely at the top. I think despite their outfield options not being great, they do have them. There are guys that they could put there. I'm not sure the same is true of the pitching unless they want to go take an enormous step down. And go to the minors, where I don't think anyone there is too good and worth bringing up at the moment. So I think they absolutely, I'm going to say they probably need that fourth, fifth starter. They need a starter real desperately, but it's pretty much right up there with a reliever because they're short on left-handed relief and the guys that are coming back are not good.
They haven't been good this year, yeah.
And they haven't been good this year. So I say we should try to find a good player, though that in and of itself has not always worked for the Phillies, as Trey Turner, an ostensibly great player, is hitting like .223.
Yeah. I think the bat is the most important thing.
Difference.
I feel like they... I agree with you that they don't really have a fourth, fifth starter in the organization, but I think they're even... I think they lack bats more than they lack arms in terms of stuff. Like, they got to go out and get Derek Hill. They wouldn't bring Felix Reyes back up with Adolis Garcia being out. That's how little they think of him. They wouldn't bring Otto Kemp back up. Remember the championship caliber player Otto Kemp that Dave Dombrowski talked about? They wouldn't bring him back up when Adolis Garcia was lost for the season, and so Gabriel Rinconis is here, Derek Hill is here. That's just a laughable outfield for a $300 million roster. I think that's got to be at the top. And then I would say the starter, and then I would say the left-handed reliever. because I feel like Alvarado, like you, has a chance to get better. And I do think I am still kind of curious about Kyle Backus. I think, and you know, if Tanner Banks maybe can get solved down in AAA a little bit, we've seen that he can be good. I feel a bit more optimistic about the in-house left-handed reliever situation than I do the outfield bat or the fourth, fifth starter. So I would rank it a bat, a starter, and then a lefty reliever. That would be my choice.
All right. I can't. Right. Here's the thing. All of them are important. They They're need all important. Of them pretty much equally. So
1A, 1B, 1C. Yeah, I agree with you.
We're just picking. We're just trying to mix things up.
Yeah. All right. So we've been talking about some of the things that are not going very well. I do want to bring up one part. We call it the Phillies Happy Corner for this part of the podcast. Because, you know, this is a team that's holding down a wild card spot right now. They're playing pretty good baseball under Don Mattingly. It feels a little bit smokish and mirrorish, but let's talk about something that's working. And Alec Bohm, who has really recovered from a brutal April, has an OPS over a little over 800 since he had that 2-day break and has just continued to play very consistent baseball in May and June. And if you'll remember, you know, Bo Bichette's in town. I didn't hear how the fan base responded to Bo Bichette when he first came to the plate on Thursday night. I haven't seen anything about that. I wasn't in the ballpark, so I didn't see it. It doesn't sound like he really generated much of a response. Nobody talked about it leading up to the series.
No one cares.
No one cares.
And you know what? As they should, because Bichette, I think, was a distraction. It would have been great if it happened, but I mean, it would have produced some fun excitement for a little bit, but, you know, I don't think it made as much of an impression on the fan because there hadn't been a big courtship. It just sort of happened and then went away.
Well, I will say this. I think after Bichette spurned the Phillies to the Mets, I think the fan base was absolutely enraged. And I fully anticipated a full-throated booing of Boo Bichette every time he came to Philadelphia. I swear I thought that was going to be a big thing, but you know what? We didn't really see it when Nick Castellanos came back for the one game he was in Philadelphia until they let him go. And I don't think we saw it with Bo Bichette. And we're not the same fan base we used to be. I mean, we used to hold on to grudges like grim death, Liz. I mean, that's just what we loved it. That was part of being a fan base, was like, yeah, you spurned us. We had to try and make up enemies, you know? And then
the only like big like booing campaign is like Bryce Harper will still get booed in some places just for being Bryce Harper. He'll come up to bat and there will be boos. And no one really talks about it, but it's sort of accepted. And that's like the only thing, one of the only things left.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's all. I mean, holding grudges is fun. And I think it's sort of made its way just to sort of like fan communities and people we hold grudges against and are angry at. You know, I think someone has to do something really big these days to get a whole fan base angry at them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and I feel like that's only going to be one of their own players, really.
That's right.
Who does a fan base care that much about? We don't care that much about Bo Bichette. He was somewhere else and went somewhere else. You know, I think we were enraged when it happened, but now looking back at it, like that was in the winter. that was back then.
The other saving grace for Bo Bichette is he stinks this year.
He stinks.
And that's kind of wanted to. He was going to replace Alec Bohm, but if you compare the numbers of the two players, they are essentially having identical seasons. Bichette has played four more games than Bohm and has accumulated another like 45 at bats or plate appearances. He has 76 hits compared to Bohm's 60 hits. But Bohm has 9 homers. Bichette has 8. They're virtually tied in RBIs. Bichette has 42. Bohm is 41. Bichette leads in batting average, but it's only 250 to Bohm's 232. And he leads in on-base percentage, but it's 295 compared to 283. Slugging percentage, Bohm is at 375. Bichette's at 372. And Bichette has a scant 10 hundredths of a point lead in OPS, 667 to 657. And in terms of OPS plus, it's 87 to 78. Now, but Bichette leads in most of those categories, but also consider Bichette is making, what was it, $40 million this year?
That's so much money.
Compared to Bohm's $10 million this year. I know we don't pay that out, but if you're looking in terms of like salary allocation for a team like the Phillies, maybe dodged a bullet.
No, Bohm was the better deal, period. You know, and he's producing at what a roughly $10 to $12 million player would be. And yeah. I think he, if he does continues to do better, he will outplay his value here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know there's a big question about what happens to him next year. And he sort of has a lot of that in his own hands now. And by pulling yeah. himself up and out of the hole that he was in, he's certainly making himself look good. And that seems to be how he works best, if we're looking at the way things have gone. He doesn't mind being in a hole and sort of digging himself out very, very steadily until he's, you know, looking exactly like he should. His numbers look just like they should.
Yeah, and he's getting up there, and he's been very good over the last couple of months. So that is a pleasant surprise. And Bryson Stott, by the way, also in the month of June, having an outstanding month at second base.
He's looked great.
They've both been much better, and it's been one of the reasons why the offense has been much better than it was in April. Still not great, you know. They wasted some opportunities on Thursday night. Couldn't get a leadoff Edmundo Sosa triple in, which drives everybody crazy.
Yes.
Bryce Harper got thrown out trying to steal third base in the first inning with two outs, which, you know, I think in his defense, it was a strikeout throw out double play. He was trying to get into scoring position with one out so that Marsh could drive him in with a run, but he just happened to wait until two strikes. Marsh swung through a pitch and it was a strike him out, throw him out. So that's why Bryce shouldn't get killed for that one, but still probably best to just stay on second.
Yeah.
All right, Liz, I want to get your thoughts because this is your wheelhouse, the collective bargaining agreement. Major League Baseball released another proposal to the players union that was made public. A couple different things I want to run by you here. They've once again proposed an international draft as part of its negotiations over a new CBA. That's according to ESPN. They are calling it a push to provide structure for an increasingly unruly and corrupt system. I don't disagree with any of that. But the international draft would be restricted to players who are at least 18 years old, as opposed to 16 under the current system. And we all know that kids under 16 are getting deals from pretty shady people in Latin America.
Kids under that age are getting shady deals. I'll keep going.
All right.
Keep going.
It would consist of 12 hard slot rounds with an initial signing bonus pool totaling $200 million for 360 amateur players that live outside the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico, according to sources. So they're going to basically have a salary. It's no longer just going to have teams being able to just go pay whatever 16-year-old they want $5 million. You know, every team has a certain amount of international bonus pool money that they can spend however they wish. But here you'd have it slotted so that a player drafted in a certain spot can only get a certain amount of money. The pitch was part of a wider MLB proposal pertaining to amateur players, one that includes drastic cuts from around $360 million to $200 million for those coming through the traditional U.S.-based draft. And it comes 3 weeks after owners formally proposed a salary cap and a salary floor, a major point of contention for the Players Association that is widely expected to trigger another prolonged lockout as the players are vehemently against any kind of salary cap and salary floor. And I saw this noted someplace else, Liz, and I don't know if this is how you see it as well, but essentially the $160 million that the owners would save under this new system with the US-based draft basically makes up for having to adhere to a salary floor, right? These teams that are coming in well under a floor now that would have to pay more, they're going to basically make those savings back with not having to pay as much money in the US amateur draft. Is basically how the numbers kind of, it seems like it's offset. You know, I haven't done crunching or anything, but
they want you to think that it's offset, but there's so much more that goes into this and so much more that they're doing to put the owners ahead financially and in the power balance over players who want to get into baseball. They're pulling money from players that do not have any. They are making restrictions on players who want to get into baseball. They are continuing to contract baseball and make it smaller, which they say, you know, it's the same amount of money, but to fewer players. And like, that's not what anyone wants, because eventually you'll be able to bring down the cost for the fewer players and make more money. All right. So let's start at the beginning.
Well, and I forgot to mention one other thing, and I want to get your thoughts on this too, because you're kind of hinting at this, and I forgot to mention this in the intro. They also want to restrict the age limit. They want to ban. They want to say no more high schoolers in the U.S. amateur draft. They want to make it so that 20 or under, no longer allowed.
Yep. So this is a huge problem, because not only has Major League Baseball made a little bit of noise about wanting there to be more black players in baseball. You know how you do that? You take them out of high school, because not all of them have the money or the scholarship opportunities to go to college. They are cutting off access to a baseball career to a massive part of the United States, including minorities. Like, it's a huge thing they're doing, because doing this, they would reduce the number of rounds, reducing the number of players that get picked up in the draft. The last time MLB reduced the number of players that were able to participate in baseball was during the big MLB contraction a couple years ago, where they got rid of a huge number of minor league teams. One of the reasons you think there are no players anymore is because they're not. They've actually removed a number of players from the huge pool that MLB teams used to have, because that's how you save owners money, by making it smaller. You don't save owners money by putting a salary cap or a salary floor. You save owners money by the peripherals. The salary, the owners can complain about the salary all they want. There's so much more that goes into a baseball business than that. That might be the biggest chunk, but like, what they're doing to make this look advantageous is giving the owners not just more power, but more ways to save money, which they will 100% do. And that's not even touching on the international draft, which the players have been against an international draft almost as much as the salary cap. Those are like 1A and 1B, because getting players into a draft forces them into a financial structure, while no draft enables them to be a little bit freer with their money. Look at how much they're going to be saving. It's like it'll make up for the salary floor. Well, you're not going to get a salary floor or a cap, so that's all null. Doesn't matter. It won't save you any money because you're not getting it.
I
do not imagine this becoming part of it. Like, players value their draft experience. They value their college experience, but their experience in being drafted and coming up, being a professional for the first time, no matter where they come from, is huge. Like, none of these players are going to want to see the pool shrunk. A lot of these people want baseball to be big.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You want to expand the game. You want to make the game bigger. You want to go outside and bring all these different players in. I don't think my point in saying that they think that the owners think that, you know, they're going to basically that the costs of the savings they get in the draft are going to offset the money that they would have to increase in spending with a salary floor. That's not a good thing for baseball. That's not a good thing.
No,
it's a way the owners are trying to basically say, okay, here you go, players. We want a salary cap, but we're also going to make the small spending teams have to pay a certain amount on their payroll. So teams like the Marlins and the Pirates and whoever, they're not going to be able to just spend $70 million anymore. They're going to have to spend $140 million a year. So these teams are going to have to pay $70 million more. See what we're doing? We're making it more fair. But on the other hand, they're proposing another rule that's going to say $160 million less dollars are going to U.S. amateur players. And the teams are basically just going to write off the two things. Like, yeah, maybe we're paying more in terms of salary, but we're going to be able to save all this money in amateur spending. And that's just it's a way of trying to make it look like to the fan base that they're addressing a problem that's not actually really how you address the problem. And it's camouflaging the benevolence that Major League Baseball owners are trying to portray.
Yes, exactly. That's a very good way to put it. It's all just horrible words that I can't say on a public radio.
I want freedom of movement. I think that there absolutely should be some things in place to kind of get at the seediness and disgustingness of the international player selection.
Of course.
it's some of it's really bad, guys. And if you haven't done any reading on it, you should. It's like some of it's really seedy out there, and some of it's really nasty. But there are other alternatives to restricting how many players a team can sign, to how much money a team like the Phillies, who are now starting to spend real money on top international stars. I don't want the Phillies being restricted on how much they can spend on Francisco Renteria or whoever the next one of those type players is going to be. And, you know, we're talking $4 million, $5 million. Like, even a team like the Rays and the Pirates can afford that if there's an international player that they really like and they really want to go after and get. So you want to make some changes? Make some changes. But this ain't that. This ain't the way to do that.
No, and I will make another point that MLB has rules in place all over.
That's true.
It's not like they do not have rules to address this. They have them. They're just not enforcing them as well as they could. And that's something to keep in mind. That should be at the front. MLB has rules to deal with this. They just don't want to enforce them. And instead of enforcing their own rules, they're going to create this rule to make it impossible for anyone to do anything other than what they want. Rob Manfred has his thing is one baseball, not baseball doing its own thing. One baseball under MLB. That's what he wants. And that's just not how, that's not in the spirit of baseball. If you know anything about baseball's history, about how baseball was started, it's all about independent leagues and guys from, like their company leagues coming in and traveling around. Like, there's so much about baseball's history that is being betrayed by how they're doing things today. It doesn't have to be that way. I'm not saying we have to do things in the old-fashioned way just because it's old-fashioned and that's how they used to do things. But right. I'm saying there's a way to keep the spirit of baseball, of what baseball has meant over the centuries, in what you do. Like, this is the antithesis of baseball, and that's what happens when you make it a business. But the point of this is to make, it's entertainment, to make people happy. The first part of it, the first thing should not be to make money. It should be to entertain people. It should be about the baseball.
You don't want it now. You don't want to be like the NFL. I mean, the owners probably do, but.
Oh my God, yes.
It's pretty ugly. The NFL's pretty ugly.
It's awful.
So you don't want baseball to be that. If you're, I'm talking to the listeners, like you don't want baseball. The owners probably do, but you don't want it to become that. And so you should be rooting against the kinds of things that they're proposing here, because you want more players. I think you made a great point about black players, and I didn't even think about that. That's a tremendous point that I think needs to be more a part of the conversation for sure.
I've watched a lot of college baseball for the College World Series, the Men's College World Series, and it's a lot of white. There's a lot of white and a little bit of Latino, but there's a lot of white and very little anything else. And baseball has been turning into that for years, and black players have been getting squeezed out for a number of reasons. One of them is because baseball to play as a child is expensive. If you want to be serious about it, you've got to spend money on travel teams, on equipment, on hotels, on travel. Like, it's a lot of money. And there are families out there with talented kids who do not have the money to do that. And their roads are already closed off to them. You know, I don't understand why they wouldn't want to get the best talent in the world into MLB. Look everywhere for it. Yeah. Like, why not look everywhere for it?
Yeah.
That's just kind of my thing. Like, especially cutting off roads to baseball for people just makes the product worse. It just makes your end product worse. It could be better, and we don't even know how much better it could be.
Yeah. Totally agree. Liz and I in lockstep on this, which is how we should be. We should always be in lockstep. That's always a good thing to be. All right, Liz, let's finish up with some final thoughts. You got anything left?
My gosh. other than if you're listening to this podcast, you're undoubtedly a friend of the pod, you're a friend of baseball, you're a friend of labor. And so spread the word. You've got friends, you've got relatives who may not understand what's going on with baseball and the lockout. The most important thing is to get everybody that you know on board and to make sure they understand that while they make a lot of money, the players are the workers in this situation. They are doing stuff that none of us can or really even want to do. So educate them about how labor can be fun. Labor can be about baseball, right?
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, listen, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Again, please, a reminder, if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts and you don't mind stopping over and giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review, we'd love to hear what you think about the show. Also, don't forget to check out the roundtable editions that we do every Monday right now over at the WHYY YouTube channel. And please tell your friends and your family members about the Hittin' Season podcast, and we'll help you get through the summer. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.